Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge.
I'm Christina Stoffo.
Our next guest is an addiction psychiatrist and mental health expert. He currently serves as chief medical officer of Elements Behavioral Health, a network of addiction treatment programs that includes Promises treatment centers in Malibu and Los Angeles and many others throughout the U.S. It is a pleasure to say hello to Dr. David Sack. Dr. Sack, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Ed. It's my pleasure.
October is Depression and Mental Health Screening Month, which suggests the needs for continued awareness. How open are we as a society to discuss and deal with these issues today?
It's gotten better. You know, there was a time 30 years ago where no one would have ever discussed having depression or being treated for it. And I think that what we've seen is that with the advent of Prozac and other modern antidepressants, people have gotten much more comfortable with sharing the fact that they may be in treatment or have this problem. But it's not perfect. And what we have is still a strong bias that people should be able to pick them up by their bootstraps and take care of this by themselves. And so we have sort of good news is people are less ashamed and more willing to talk about it. The bad news is that this is a can-do culture that often struggles to understand depression and why people can't just fix it themselves.
There has been a negative stigma attached to mental health problems or people who have addictions. Do you think that that's still a problem today, coming out or seeking help?
Absolutely. We know that only 1 out of 10 people with a problem with drugs or alcohol ever seeks treatment. And a lot of that is because they're too ashamed and because they feel that they're going to be judged for having that problem. And most people who don't have a problem with drugs or alcohol or who haven't had a relative with that problem struggle to understand why the person can't control it, or they start to believe that that person is just doing it to themselves and they should just stop. Mm-hmm. In other words, they see it as a moral weakness and they should be able to just discontinue it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the society that we live in, we have so much temptation around us and things that we can become addicted to. You know, I had a conversation with somebody the other day. We essentially are all carrying a pocket full of porn with us on our smartphones if we choose to look at it. And with all of these stimulations and all of these things that are available, how much more vulnerable are we to addiction today?
You make a good point with porn, which is that it's much more available than it once was. We don't have to go to some girly movie theater for a midnight show or go into a video cassette store to some back room. Anybody can turn on their smartphone or iPad and all of a sudden be cruising the internet. And one of the things that we know about drugs and gambling and pornography is that the number of addicts is directly proportional to the availability of the drug.
Mm-hmm.
So as these things have become more available and more tolerated by society, the addiction rates have gone up. It's not really surprising. If you think about it, the two drugs that are the most have the most addicts are nicotine and alcohol, and it's because both of them are legal.
Yeah,
that's exactly
that's
right.
True.
And it's funny, you talked about gambling for a minute. I mean, I live in a state where you can literally now, bringing back the smartphone, I can gamble at a New Jersey casino as I'm standing on a platform waiting for a train to come by. I mean, just the temptations are out there, and we are now being bombarded with these new services where you can actually gamble on football, baseball, basketball, hockey games all over the place at any time. In terms of the behavior that someone would exhibit if they are addicted in a work setting, in a family setting, what are some of the signs that people should look for in others as signs that they're addicted and not just obsessed with something?
For it to be addiction, it has to be repetitive and it has to involve a tremendous amount of time and attention to engaging in that activity or getting and obtaining the drug. So the first thing is there has to be a high motivation to continue to do it, and then to continue to do it in the face of obvious consequences.
Mm-hmm.
The person who spends all of their time on pornography and so they can't get their work done or they don't pay their bills or they're not engaging in a relationship with their family because they're so busy with it is another example. So it's the fact that they continue to engage in that behavior in the face of consequences that's often the first clue that there's a real problem going on.
So what can be done as far as government, let's say, is concerned to address addiction? Like, for example, cigarettes now are $8 and $9 a pack, depending on what state you're
mm-hmm.
in. People are still buying the cigarettes. They're going broke smoking cigarettes. So is there anything that can be done to really stop people from doing what they want?
The price of cigarettes does affect the number of cigarette addicts. That is, that the rates of addiction have gone down, mm-hmm. and particularly because young people can't afford to buy them. So
right.
the rate of new addiction does decrease up to a point when you raise the cost of a drug. But generally speaking, interdiction, that is trying to stop availability of drugs, has not worked. You know, historically, there was discrimination against treatment for drug and alcohol problems, and many people's private insurance didn't cover, treatment for drug addiction. Now we have laws that require that people's health insurance cover addiction in the same way it covers medical problems. But those laws aren't being enforced. So the government took the first right step in saying we have to have parity between medical treatment and addiction treatment. But now they need to take the next step is they have to come out with a much better way of holding insurance companies accountable because they're not following the law.
That's amazing. I mean, because it is an illness. It's a disease. We come from a time, really the Stone Age, when these things were thought of as personal, private, family problems that don't really need to be dealt with. How can these insurance companies still get away with that when they choose to do it?
Well, I think that part of the problem is that the government has a lot of different priorities. And so when they passed, in this case, the parity laws, they basically said, even though this is a federal law, we're going to leave it to each state to figure out how to best enforce it. So without a standard, each state is trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. And so some states, like New York, have gotten very active in trying to find better ways to enforce it. But, you know, many other states don't have the resources or the knowledge in how to kind of go about that process.
How frustrating is it to you as you watch presidential candidates talk about issues and things that they feel are important to Americans? This is a topic that is never, ever brought up in a national discussion. How frustrating is that to you?
Well, it's frustrating, but starting to realize that putting drug addicts in prison is ineffective and very expensive, that if we want to solve the problem, what we really need to do is to move to a rehabilitation model, that we've created this incredibly wasteful and costly system that serves the society very poorly. So I think that the thinking is starting to change, but it just always feels too slow. With someone in the field waiting for treatment to get paid for, it never happens fast enough. We have to have better treatment in prison and in jail if we're going to, you know, reduce the reincarceration rates.
You know, we talked before about some of the addictions that first come to mind, alcohol, drugs, now pornography, gambling, things like that. There are other potential addictions that are out there that you don't really think about it. And when you do, they might seem somewhat innocuous. What about sugar? What about these energy drinks?
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how when we simply go out there to feed ourselves, we are opening ourselves up for a variety of addictions.
Well,
are we not?
What about caffeine? There's a coffee shop on every corner now. Anywhere you go.
Right. So let's talk about food and sugar, because I think it's important. You know, the American Society of Addiction Medicine recognized that addiction wasn't about the specific drug, but it was about looking for ways to stimulate the brain's reward circuitry, and that it was finding potent stimulators for that, whether it was sex or drugs. And I think food is a good example where it's now clear in animal models that sugar does, in fact, stimulate that same brain reward circuitry, probably because through most of human history, we didn't have enough food, not too much food. And so knowing to find food rewarding was probably very helpful and motivated us to get more of it. And we now have food scientists that the food industry pays to design our food to make it even more tasty and rewarding. And
wow.
So food is an issue. And again, it's an issue in part because we're hardwired to seek out things that we need to survive, like food and salt, that stimulate the same brain regions as drugs do, like, you know, cocaine and amphetamine.
It's quite diabolical, too. And I mean, with these food companies, they said for years, like, you know, the pretty boxes of the kids' cereals and things like that. And now these energy drinks that are being marketed that they will carry you through your day. And even you said just regular caffeine.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting. If you look at some food nutritional label where it gives you like the ingredients in weird foods that you wouldn't expect to see sugar in, sugar is an ingredient.
That's right.
Like tomato
That's
sauce
right.
or peanut butter. It's weird for me to see that.
And I think that, you know, we have many bad habits that leave us vulnerable to then looking for a drug to solve the problem. So caffeine is a really good example. There have been a number of studies that show that on the average, Americans, both men and women, are chronically sleep deprived. So it shouldn't surprise us that we need a Starbucks or a coffee shop on every corner
sure. If
we're not getting enough sleep. But the solution isn't pumping our veins with caffeine, although Coca-Cola and Pepsi and Starbucks are happy to provide it. The solution is to get more sleep. And I think that as a society, we struggle with that because we want the easier thing. You know, the easier thing is to take the energy drink or to juice up or do things that compensate for a problem that we created ourselves.
Well, once again, October is Depression and Mental Health Screening Month. It's a good time to stop and not only reassess our own behaviors, but maybe even those of the ones we care about. Dr. David Sack, thank you so much for joining us here on America Weekend.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge.
I'm Christina Stoffa.
And this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
He spent 14 of his 15 years in the majors with the Seattle Mariners, hitting over 300 home runs and driving in just shy of 1,000 runs.
Deep to left center, a grand slam. Scores four with his 15th home run of the year.
So where is Jay Buhner now? Jay retired following the 2001 season. He works with the Mariners during spring training, and the team inducted him into their Hall of Fame in 2004. Jay was immortalized on an episode of Seinfeld when the fictitious version of George Steinbrenner paid a visit to the home of Frank Costanza, played by the great Jerry Stiller.
What the hell did you trade Jay Buhner for? He had 30 home runs and over 100 RBIs last year. He's got a rocket for an arm. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
Jay Buhner, living on in syndication. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Who's this? Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Susan, and I live in Grand Island, Florida.
Out of towner.
Our fourth time, the Biketoberfest. Love it. I feel like I'm on vacation every single day.
Today on American Biker Minute.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today and call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. Biketoberfest, Main Street, Daytona.
We get here about 7:30 in the morning, go down to the boardwalk and have breakfast, set up our bikes. We got our little stadium chairs, and we just watch all day. Best ride, solo trip from Louisville, Kentucky to Charleston, West Virginia to see my mother. It was just awesome because I was all by myself, pulled off anytime I wanted to. I didn't have to follow anybody. I loved it. I loved that independence. It was beautiful.
American Biker Minute.
Explore Florida.
Your passport to the open road on two wheels.